committee, the media, whoever is present in a various degree of your responsibility, you are all welcome. I would request if there are those who have apologies, on behalf of you.
Honorable Chair, this is Makashupi Ntebogo. He's going to be dealing with the next presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members. My presentation will be on the draft regulations on participation of staff members as candidates in elections. Section 71A, Section 72, and 120 of the Local Government Systems Act empowers the minister to regulate on this particular aspect of councillors, officials, or staff members participating in elections. As already indicated, Chairperson, I will not read word by word of the presentation, but I'll maybe say on the implications of what these particular regulations are. The implications are that municipalities will be able to effectively manage staff members who stand for public office in any election. Further, the participation of municipal staff members in an election will have consequences as a result that minister will then have to regulate the participation of staff members in municipal elections. It is also that the municipal staff member who chooses to participate as a candidate of any election, upon being issued by certificate by the IEC, the regulations are of such a nature that that particular staff member shall have been deemed to be on annual leave upon the receipt of the certificate and the second day after he or she has received the certificate from the IEC. The issue being that, the real issue being that, the minister wanted to regulate the conduct of such persons during the election period. It's at a time when he or she receives the certificate, after the time when the IEC makes announcement or pronouncement on the election results, alternatively, whether the member accepts the nomination or not, or whether the member turns the outcome as a result of he or she having won the elections. Now, before that particular period, what will then be the conduct of that particular sub-member? The minister then set to regulate that particular conduct. And that is indicated in various sections of the regulations. What we did during, before this particular regulation to be published for public comment, the department consulted with all provincial departments responsible for local government. They gave their inputs, and we deliberated and engaged on contagious issues that relate to how we are going to deal with it, without necessarily curtailing the existing privileges and rights that members of staff are entitled to by law. We also consulted with SALGA, we consulted with the Department of Public Service and Administration, and the South African Local Governing, the Local Government Bargaining Council. The issue here was for them to give an input at a technical level as to how we are going to deal with the regulation of consequences of staff members in during elections. The set regulations, after thorough consultation with the set stakeholders, were then published for public comment on the 18th of June this year. And the closing date thereof was of the 18th of July this year, gave them a month for the public to comment on this. I must say, Chairperson, that up to so far we have received at least five comments from members of the public that will then be having to take into account when we, when the minister finally promulgates this particular regulation. Chairperson, the crux of the regulations are as follows. Regulation one, I won't go deeper into it, but if need be, maybe I will elaborate when the House needs to engage me on in relation to explaining what are the real contents of each section in the regulation. Regulation one provides primarily for definitions that is indicated here. Regulation 3 provides for the conditions applicable to a staff member after being officially declared a candidate for public office. I've already indicated, Chairperson, that the person, upon receiving a certificate from the IEC, the person will have to present that to the municipality, and on the second day, of the issues that certificate the person shall be deemed to be on annual leave. Regulation 4 provides for steps that should be taken by the municipality to ensure maintenance and continuity of job functions and service in the municipality. It is that a person who is participating in the elections, upon being given a certificate to participate in such elections, there should be a continuity in relation to his or her work as per the employment contract that he or she has signed with the municipality. So that deals with consequences that relate to when the person is on annual leave. Section 5, Regulation 5 deals with the same issue, but to those staff members who are on performance contract, that once they go on annual leave, they should be continued. The municipality must have internal mechanism to see to it that those performance targets that they've been earmarked for that particular person are continued with by another staff member in the municipality. Regulation 7 provides for the limits on the usage of municipal equipment and facilities of municipal data and information. That such a employee, once on annual leave and as a member participating in the elections, shall not have access to any information of the municipality in order to advance his or her chances, the person having an unfettered advantage over other candidates because the person is employed by the municipality. That curtails that particular relationship between that person and the municipality. Regulation 8 prohibits the use of any staff member by the candidate or acceptance of assistance from any other staff member for the purpose of election. The staff member on leave might not at any stage use the resources, be it human otherwise, of a municipality to advance his or her cause as a candidate in the municipal elections or any other election whatsoever, national and provincial. Regulation 9 provides for municipalities' right to urgently request critical information and documentation for the purpose of business continuity and management of the municipality, that the municipality will have a right in the event that they need to access information that person on leave has. The municipality has the right to recall that person, to call that person to come back to office to provide this particular information. Regulation 10 provides for consequences should there be any breach of the consequences of this regulation. This one, primarily chairperson, deals with the issue where there is a breach of the regulation, then that will be deemed the breach of the code of conduct of an employee of that municipality. So in the definition of misconduct, this particular section therefore indicates that a person by breaching this particular section shall be deemed to be in breach of the code of conduct of employees of a municipality. Regulation 11 and 12 respectively provide for the short and title of the regulation and the effective date on which this will be made. That is self-explanatory, Chairperson, but those are primarily, in brief, explanations of regulation by regulation as to what the minister intends regulating this particular conduct of members who participate in elections. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members. I think I'll pause here before we proceed to other two aspects. Precisely because this regulation is at the core. It also touches Chapter 3 of the Constitution, that we are three spheres, and interdependent, interrelated, and distinct. So at that distinctiveness, so this regulation seeks to say something in terms of how does municipal interact with provinces and national, and therefore to allow for members to engage with this thing. Because it's a very important regulation which tries to reshape the relationship of municipal, the province, and the national department. And not that I would stop if there is a comment on the disaster issue. I thought it's straightforward, but let me pause here and allow members to engage with this one. Honorable Watson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I can see that the department has gone to some length to try and regulate irregularities, if I may put it that way. My concern is not so much with provincial and national elections, but municipal elections and affecting a staff of that particular municipality could be problematic. Now, I notice the points that were brought into the regulations or the proposed regulations to curtail interaction with the staff and with the equipment, and also forms of actions in case of breach. But you know, Chair, the problem is that in that municipality, that member of staff is a pal of everybody else in that municipality, including the MEO, which is the municipal electoral officer, which is normally appointed by the IEC from the staff. And I'm not so sure that these regulations are enough to stop any form of interaction by a member of the staff of that municipality, who is also a candidate for that election. It says regulations provide for conditions and blah, blah, blah. But I would like to see in it that the moment the IEC issue the staff member with a certificate as a candidate and compulsory relief kicks in, it should also mean no entrance into the workplace that person is used to going until the results of that election is announced. The normal interaction in regard to elections is done by the party and not by individuals.
Thank you, Anyata. Honorable Matila, Honorable Messi.
No, Chair. Maybe it is indicated that some councillors are full-time, some are part-time. In the event that an employee who is part-time, an employee is elected as a part-time councillor, how do you deal with that situation? Because that person is allowed to continue working somewhere else, you know, if it's outside. Now, how do you deal with that type of situation? Because that person is allowed to can be a counselor and work somewhere else, you know. That is the first step. The second area emanates from what my colleague has just indicated. You know, maybe explain to us as to how are you going to limit. Because you see, the reality of the matter is, if that person was a key functionary of that particular municipality, that person has a lot of information.
Yeah.
That person has a lot of data. You know, already that person, whether you like it or not, has an advantage to can deal with that situation. Now, how do you stop that person to can move on with that particular situation? Because the reality of the matter is, you can't stop that person to provide society with the information that he has at that point in time. He's not going back to the municipality to collect that, but he has that, you see, because he has that knowledge, he has that information. And in politics, whatever information that you have, you use for campaigning. You know, you might use weaknesses of that particular municipality because you know them, you see. You don't have to look for another, but also, you know, coming to issues like equipment. I'm not sure what you mean by that, because I know possibly you might say that person might not use a car, might not enter. You're not telling us as to whether that person will not be able to can enter the premises of
that's my point.
That municipality. But that person is a rate payer. That person must go and pay for his services or his services at the same municipality. Now, how do you regulate all those things, you know? Because he might use that situation to enter that municipality, you know, whilst he wants something else. And you can't stop that person from doing that. Are you going to be following all these councillors throughout? If you have 300 candidates and they come more or less at the same time, will you follow them into that municipality? You know, and that's the problem that I think we need some clarity on. You know, maybe briefly it will also be important. Because I know the chairperson indicated that, you know, touch on the key areas. But some of these problematic areas, can you further explain as to, in detail, as to how are you going to deal with those specific issues? Vis-a-vis the rights of the individual in terms of the constitution.
Honorable Nancy.
Chair, I don't want to appear
as if I'm revolting against the Freedom Charter here. Because we've said every man and woman shall have the right to stand as a candidate for all politicians to make laws. Now, I think even our constitution refers us to that. But the bottom line, aligning myself with the colleagues who have asked the questions here, the bottom line is that the kind of people that we need in South Africa, we are not ready there. We don't have people with the morality that we need so that we can advance the National Democratic Society that we want. We don't have that such corps of cadres here in this country. No matter they are from which party, at the moment, we are still clinging on the old values of the old system. We are not already human in the fact that when we look into people and when we deal with them as humans in the society that we want this human civilization ever, that will assist all of us to create better life for all. This statement is based on the fact that I'm just worried, really, Honorable Watson, when he says we are attempting to regulate irregularities, I think that is enough. Because how do you ensure that this person, for instance, a director of corporate services, chooses to be a candidate in the municipality, then he's being elected or not elected, he or she uses on the staff there, not by going into the municipality, but those people, they know that person because they are head there. Even if he or she loses, they know she will be back. Even if she wins, they know she will be back, and they will have advantages of many things. I mean, how to ensure that you will make sure that these people don't manipulate the system? Already we are in a problem with these municipalities because of these loose laws, because they are loose and chaotic, in fact, taking advantage of the very same constitution, but misdirecting us to something else. I'm interested just to hear from the department. How do you ensure this thing that we are going to say, how are you going to regulate this thing? How are you going to regulate irregularity? Because already for me, it's irregularity to say a person can stand, and then you said, is going to annual leave. What is that? What if that person loses? Obviously, goes back to work. But if it was straightforward to say, if you are standing, because somewhere at the beginning, when it comes to the municipality, it was said, if you are a municipal worker and want to stand as a candidate for local government, then you must resign as a worker in the municipality. Then that was fine. Where is that gone now, and how it went out of your planning? I mean, I'm interested, really, how are you going to regulate this? I suspect that we are going to get into a more chaos than we are at the moment. Maybe you are going to explain exactly what you mean by these regulations that we are coming with, and how are we going to ensure that at least we are able to control our people. Because at the moment, as I was saying, we don't have people who think for others. We've got people who think for themselves at the moment. Desperate, greedy, because they want to enrich themselves. They want control. They want power everywhere where they can get it, no matter they are coming from which party. But we've got that problem. Because some of them don't have even the background of why are we here at the moment in this country. But the background they have is that they want to get rich. Thank you, Sir President.
Thank you very much. In the absence of further, we didn't introduce each other. I made a mistake. We didn't introduce each other. I'm unable to say Honorable Wu and Wu. My apology. Maybe we can introduce each other if we speak.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Sipiwo Phithi, representative of SALGA. I am very not at ease with the regulations. And whatever we try to regulate, I believe that we are really creating a bigger problem at municipalities at this point in time. If we need to have this kind of regulations, I would say it is very early for us in this country really to have such a regulations, whilst we have not really succeeded at the first time to bring municipalities at the point where we would want to get municipalities to be and so on. And now we're creating this kind of regulations that I believe, as I've said, would create more problems for municipalities. The annual leave approach, where you probably give the official or the staff member compulsory leave, what has been built in, I'm just asking it now, not that I'm supporting the regulation, just trying to get clarity as to when a member has just been on leave in December and the elections are in February, March. What are we building in to that kind of space that we are creating in order to ensure that the annual leave goes in line with annual as a cycle? And also, I think if ever we people really want to be councillors, why then not resign? I think we need to put it then clear to say, let there not be a back door open for the individual to come back, because that in itself, and I wouldn't want to continue repeating what previous speakers have said, but really creates a situation where people feel obliged to support this person because they know what the regulations are saying, that either way, this person is coming back and so on. So I would then put it as that if any official of a municipality would want to be part of being a councillor and hold public office, let that person outright resign from his position. Thank you.
That is the input of Sarika. Is there any other before I give the department to respond? Okay, you can respond.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start with the issue raised by Salga. I must first and foremost indicate that I indicated in my presentation that we consulted with Salga thoroughly on this issue, Salga nationally, and what Salga has indicated found expression in the draft regulations that we have set for public comment. But be it as it may, I will then respond to the specific issue. To say that the Local Government Laws Amendment Act of 2008 inserted Section 71A of Act 32 of 2000, which stated as follows, that the staff member may be a candidate for election to the National Assembly or to the Provincial Legislature, or may be nominated as a permanent delegate of the National Council of Government, subject to the code and conduct of municipal staff members contemplating Section in Schedule 2 and any other prescribed limits and conditions as may be regulated by the minister. Number 2 thereof says, a staff member who is nominated as a permanent delegate to the National Council of Provinces must resign not later than the date on which he or she is appointed on a permanent basis. Number 3 says, a staff member may be candidate for election to a municipal council subject to the code of conduct of municipal contemplated in Schedule 2 and any other prescribed limits and conditions as may be resolved by the minister. In itself, it says it gives the members of the staff members and any other member a right to participate in elections, be that local government, provincial and national government, or being nominated to the NCOP. Now, the issue that has been raised of why shouldn't the member, the staff member then resign upon participating in the election at local, provincial, national level. The law provides that they may participate, and only at the time when they have been issued with a certificate, then they may then be on leave, on annual leave, not that they must resign upon them. The law is repealed to say they must be on leave upon receipt of the certificate. It doesn't say that they must resign upon being participating as a candidate to the local, provincial, or national elections. The other issue here is when members are saying, how do we then further regulate instances where members of the municipality who participate in elections interact with the members of the other staff members of the municipality for them to give themselves advantage as candidates in the elections? Going back to specifics in the regulations as proposed, it is very clear that members who have received a certificate to participate in elections will then, once a staff member who has been issued the certificate as contemplated in regulation 1, shall be deemed to be on annual leave from the date following the date on which the candidate was issued with that certificate. It further says, number 3, it further says the proposal, it further says, if a staff member has insufficient annual leave, he or she shall be deemed to be on unpaid leave for the period in question. That is, upon such time that 3 instances will then take place. After the person has been on leave, if he has exhausted all his annual leave, then it will be deemed that that person should be on unpaid leave upon 3 things taking place. If the person is elected and accepts the election, the date immediately before the date he or she assumes office. Secondly, if the person is elected but declines the election, the date on which he or she declines the election. Thirdly, if the person is not elected, the date on which the result of the election is declared. Now, that leave falls off on the eventuality of this particular 3 instances. Now, the issue that the members are raising, that how will you then going to regulate this interaction that the member participates in elections? How are you going to regulate that in relation to how the person is going to relate to members of other staff members of the municipality? It is going to be very, very difficult, in my opinion, when looking at the regulation and the spirit of the regulation, that it will be difficult to extensively regulate human conduct on when how staff members are meeting outside the perimeters of their workplace, outside the ambit of the definition of what their work definitions are. It is going to be highly, highly difficult and impossible to can do that. For an example, you can't regulate that they can't meet in a cafe and discuss issues, and now you're going to be in a position to implement whatever discussions that a staff member will be having with other staff members. But it is very clear in the regulation that the following will then have to be applicable, that a staff member who is participating in the elections shall be precluded to use information from other staff members in order for he or her to have advantage of other candidates participating in the elections. With other personal interactions, how do you put that in law? How do you regulate that? My opinion is it is not going to be conducive for us to can try to put that in legislation, in regulation, to can start to do that. When dealing with issues of municipal equipment and facilities raised by the past 2-3 honorable members, specifically in the regulations, we say a municipal staff member participating as a candidate in elections may not use any equipment, finance, revenue, and facilities that belong to and are wholly provided by the municipality for the purpose of promoting his or her candidature in elections, except facilities such as community halls and other public amenities. So recall that if a staff member participates in the elections, well, he may be in a position to can address members of the public. He will then use public halls and so forth. So you can't preclude him from using that, because each and every other candidate will be allowed to be using such amenities. But in relation to finance, revenue, and facilities that belong to and are wholly provided by the municipality, then that particular staff member is precluded from having access and using that for purpose of enhancing his candidature. Secondly, we are saying any other property, whether movable or immovable, that belong to and are wholly owned by the municipality, including but not limited to communication technology, landline telephones, cell phones, municipal funds, stationery, photocopying machines, computers, signatures and emblems, vehicles, emails, faxes, postage facilities, an address list, internet resources for purposes of promoting his or her candidate in elections. Now, in this particular regulation, we now specify those specific issues that we said any staff member who's on annual leave upon the civil certificate should not have access to those in order for him or her to promote his candidature in the elections. It further said a staff member participating as a candidate elections may not use any data, and information which is not in the public domain. Now that relates to what the honourable member has indicated. Belong to us, and if a member participating as a candidate in elections may not use any data and information which is not in the public domain or belongs to and is funded and managed by the municipality for the purposes of promoting his or her candidature in elections. Now, we are trying to narrow here the prohibition of a member participating in elections using information of the municipality, the data or other any other social source whatsoever, in order for the person to have an unfettered advantage over other members who are participating in elections. Now, that is specifically what the regulation seeks to guard. Now, I indicated that it is going to be very difficult for any other member, staff member of council, when we regulate, we try to regulate this conduct that relates to his interaction with members of the municipality where he's employed. But in trying to do that, we didn't try to do the impossible. We thought of proposing issues that are manageable and implementable. For example, Regulation 8 of the regulation said a staff member who participated in the candidate elections may not use the services of any staff member of a municipality, including staff members directly or indirectly reporting to that staff member for purposes of promoting his or her candidature. We are now saying that we are putting this regulation to say that in the event that it will be found by the municipality that this particular staff member has used any staff member or members directly responsible to that particular member to enhance his candidature, then that will result in a misconduct of that particular person and any other person who gave the candidate that particular information. But we can't go so far, like I've indicated, to regulate something deeper than this, that. You can't put that in regulation. We further say a staff member who participated as a candidate in elections may not accept or receive any assistance directly or indirectly from staff members of a municipality while carrying out their daily duties and responsibilities as staff members of the municipality. The person who is a candidate in the elections cannot phone a staff member and say, based on the following, can you give me information because I need this in order to enhance my candidature in the elections. Now, those are the two issues that we have quarantined here that deals with what the relationship will be between a member of staff participating in elections and other staff members in council. If I have not responded to all the other issues here, I think my other colleagues may interact with the issues raised by members through you, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me allow if there are other colleagues who want to add before members come once more. Is there any?
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members. I think I just want just to support the view that we're putting on the table, and it's true indeed that we do have a challenge at the municipal level, and for us it's to ensure that we regulate what really is happening on the ground, because if we don't have anything that suggests that some of the things that people do at that level is wrong, I think people will have a right to continue doing with what they're doing now. Because if you don't put the regulations, what will then happen is that a member may go to his office and do whatever he wants to do. And I think this is what one just wanted to manage, to make sure that as much as people will be exercising their own rights, but it's important that being employees in their own right. They don't get that advantage. And for us, I think that's what we're trying to do. Of course, we'll expect the municipalities to institute disciplinary measures in the event when people are found to have misconducted themselves. It's a question of discipline. It's unfortunate that we have to come up with regulations in order to ensure that there is order. But in the event where there is no regulation, there are no measures. Of course, there will be chaos at the local level. For us to make sure that moving forward as a responsible government, you must have measures in place to cover those things that we think that we can manage, and for us to make sure that we deal with those issues and manage the conduct of the employees. The dicey part around this, honourable members, is that these are people who are also employees, as the honourable member said earlier. They are employees, but also they want to venture as politicians. They are not politicians as such until they are declared as such, when they accept that they become councillors. But as they remain employees, they must remain employees, but we must have a way of managing the transition. And I think this is what we are trying to do, to say this is what we can do humanly possible. Moving forward, but I think this is what we can do in the circumstances. But there must be measures, there must be order. Of course, we'll improve on these regulations as time goes by, but this is what we feel that we can do in the circumstances moving forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable. Okay, wait.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I think just to finally add on the presentation and the addition by my colleague is that what the Honourable Chairperson mentioned right at the beginning is that the regulations as they stand and the draft that is being proposed in front of the Honourable Committee is that we are treading very carefully around the issues of the constitution of the country, in the sense that the human beings or the persons that are in question are also entitled to as much rights within the constitution as all other individuals. If we take it a bit further, Chairperson, and I think we had raised this matter around CDWs before, who are also public servants in effect, to this committee, in the sense that they are also exposed to as much information as municipal officials would be in a specific ward. And the experience that we have also shared with this committee before is that in the past elections, in 2006 local government elections, quite a number of CDWs became ward councillors, basically because of what members are raising, their ability to have access to information, which they didn't have to go and look for again during the election. It's inherently within their brains to be able to retain information like that. But it is also important to note the questions that are being raised around how do you regulate, because there's also an issue of self-regulation, and also other political parties making sure that by knowing that a member of a specific component of staff in a municipality is now a candidate, political parties are then policing, in the sense that of checking how do they act after they've received their certificate, who do they interact with, how do they do it. The difficulty comes, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, when we then say, which we didn't say in our draft, they cannot enter the municipal building or a place of work. Because municipal buildings are used, firstly, by MEOs to hold their electoral meetings, in the sense that the local electoral committees are meeting in the municipal building. If it so happens that the candidate is a municipal official and the meeting is taking place in a municipal building, they are bound to have to attend the meeting in that particular building. Now, such a prohibition might just be treading very thinly on the border of us infringing on the rights of this particular individual. So we are therefore saying we know what the committee members are raising. We'll try and work them in, but it's impossible to really go to the nitty-gritties and regulate everything. We are dependent on other political parties, the individuals themselves, but also the electoral court in case where other political parties might find that an individual has acted outside these specific regulations, if they are so approved. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for that petition. I've seen hands. We'll follow up, Honourable Matida, Honourable Watson, Honourable Ness.
Yes. No, Chair, listening to the further explanation, and I'm becoming more scared. See, the problem that I see here is that, you see, whatever official at whatever level of government, the reality of the matter is 90% of them belong to political parties. in their own right. And what you're trying, in terms of what you said, in terms of the regulations, is now you're limiting that particular individual who's not a candidate. Because, for example, if I'm doing my political work, not necessarily from, but outside, and unfortunately, that particular candidate happens to be a person that I'm directly or indirectly reporting to. But this side, I'm doing my political work. Because if you look at most of these ditches, or the municipal manager, you come to the Western Cape, they will belong to the DA, the DA municipality. They belong to that political party. Now, whilst we are regulating that, and I'm talking about ordinary workers there, who are going to be affected by this particular regulation, you see. Because whether indirectly or whatever way, because, you know, when they are seen, and I'm saying this precisely because of what has happened in the Western Cape now recently, you know, where a dissolution has just happened in a municipality using Section 13, and nobody can question that particular situation, you see. And I'm saying the disadvantage that ordinary employees are going to have is that they're going to be victimized, or you know, anything can happen to them, you know, precisely, whether by the ruling party, whether by the opposition, people will take advantage of specific situations. Now, in terms of the very same constitution you're referring to, where are those people's rights? Because, you see, I'm just saying, look at this thing broadly, in terms of the way, because whether indirectly or directly, you know, how are they going to play their social role within that specific community, you see? Because elections are elections. Some of these employees, however indirect, they might, by the political party, be seconded to become party agents and working for the same official, indirectly or directly so, official who's, because he's a party agent of that political party. How do you deal with that situation? I'm just saying, are we not trying to, because I'm also dealing with the fears that has been raised by Member Nancy there, that what is it that we are trying to do in terms of the regulations themselves, you see? I don't have a problem in trying to regulate, trying to make sure that people, you know, there's some discipline somewhere. But are you not creating disadvantages for ordinary people who, as we campaign, we say they must be part of a process, they must belong to all these things, and we say in terms of our own constitution, they must be free to can do everything else. No? And then we come back and say to the very same municipal workers and say to them, you know, you can't do this. While nationally and provincially, nationally and provincially, we don't have that, you see. But this specifically goes for local government employees. I'm not saying, I understand where you're coming from, you see. I understand that, but that's, I understand the problems on the ground. But I'm just saying in terms of the Constitution, because I don't want us to say at the end of the day we support this and we are challenging the Constitutional Court because of the issues I'm raising, you see. That then you are challenged, and this particular committee has recommended to the House that we accept these regulations as they are, and the next thing they attend, you know, they're then reversed by or rejected by the Constitutional Court. Because I'm just saying, you know, how do you deal with the freedom of those individuals? Now, I'm not talking about the candidates here. No? Because here you are saying indirectly reporting or directly reporting to those officials. Unfortunately, they happen to stay in that ward. You might have a number of them, I don't know, you know. Because what I know is, if you look at in terms of the provinces themselves or the municipalities, the CDWs are raising. You know, if you come to the Western Cape, the majority will belong, in terms of the DA municipalities, will belong to the DA. When coming to the entire province or other areas of the Western Cape, the majority will belong to the ANC. You know? Why? Because that's how it will happen. You know? But you are limiting the participation of all these individuals. I'm not saying the CDWs alone. I'm saying from a cleaner, you know, a cleaner moving up. How do you make sure that these people are not victimized? Because you might find out that in Johannesburg, there are a number of cleaners who have been DA members, you know. They'll be targeted by us from the ANC. You see, to say if we see them doing 1, 2, 3 towards a specific candidate, who was them, and how do you assist those cleaners, because they are not aware, they don't know what is said. You know, they might not have gone through this particular process. And I'm just saying, my only worry, Chair, is how do we make sure that we don't tamper with the freedoms of these particular individuals, the rights that are there in the Constitution. You know, how do we deal with that in terms of our own regulations?
Chair, I think I'm covered by a lot of the questions that my colleague has asked. But, and again, I say that the regulations are very brief. We haven't been able, or we haven't had the privilege of full details before. One mention was made that if that candidate is elected and declines the election, then he goes back into the job again. Now, I don't know how thoroughly you thought about this, but if a ward candidate, if it's a PR or provincial or national, the next person on the list moves up. But if it's a ward candidate, and that candidate is declared the winner, that candidate is automatically a councillor and has to resign to get out of that ward. He can't just go back into his job, and there's nobody else to take the place. The state and the political parties, everybody involved, will have to fight another by-election or an election in that ward. So it's not as simple as saying, I decline the election. Even if you die halfway through the election, it still carries on. So I don't think you've looked at the implications of elections very thoroughly. Also, you say that the person involved, the staff member who is a candidate, is prohibited from any information that might support or promote his or her candidature. But he or she is also part of a party, and there is an election taking place. So those prohibitions should go further and say, if you're going to push through with this, should go further and say, also anything that might benefit his or her party. And I think you should actually go so far as to say anything that has to do with the election at hand. But, Chairperson, unfortunately, it's now 1 o'clock. I have to go to the Constitutional Review Committee that I've been trying to meet for 4 weeks now. So, if you will excuse me.
There you are. Excused. Honourable Nation.
I hope you will also review some other things in that meeting.
Whatever you tell me to.
Chairperson, the department is saying this is going to be very difficult. They are saying it's going to be very difficult because you cannot easily regulate the behavior of human beings. Not easily. Because the way you are treating them, the society broadly, we treat these people as if they are what we want. That they think about others, that they want to help others, that they want to do good for others. And in the process of trying to influence the society towards a certain direction, we create space for them for chaos and anarchy. And the department is saying, we are going to regulate. No matter it's chaos or in anarchy, we're going to regulate that anarchy. That's what they are saying. And I understand, because you are complying with the Constitution, I understand what you are saying. I want to make a simple example. As we speak, I remember, there's a councillor where I'm coming from my own political party, from the East, but he's got advantage. She's at Rhodes, a lecturer, and she left Rhodes to be a councillor, a full-time councillor. She looked at the packages of what she has been at Rhodes, and she realized, no, the package is not what I thought of. And she's back at Rhodes. And she's saying she's doing 2 hours at Rhodes. She's a lecturer, a professor. She's saying she's doing 2 hours at Rhodes. Now she's got 2 jobs. She's a full-time counselor. She's part-time at Rhodes. Local government department is here. and the leadership there to intervene at the local level, no matter which political party is, they are very weak than us down there. And if we don't assist at this level by having regulations which are clear, because what Sanka was saying is correct. If you choose to be a politician, be a politician. You can't balance, climb on the fence and wait till you see, I mean, which side are you going to follow, because you don't know what is it that you want to do. Because if administrators are administrators, they want to administrate the laws that will be made by politicians and implement. That's what they will be wanting to do, to implement these laws, to make sure that they come up with these regulations, which will do good for the society. But we start here as politicians by creating space for them to choose. And we leave revolution to chance. We'll depend to chance if they will think for us. I'm worried that I'm part of that. I think the department must consider seriously that fine, because the law, that the constitution says everybody has the right to stand as a candidate, then that must be it. But if you want to be a candidate, resign from the administration once and for all and go that route. Even if you are going to win or you are going to lose, because if you want to be a councillor or a politician, then you'll find a way to do that. Otherwise, as other members were saying that, just imagine a CDW. The CDW is there for all the time. I'll give you another example. In my town, 2006, the director was fired from work because of all these things that were said against him. And this guy, what he did, he left his work and he went to each and every ward. He thick-handed councillors, people who never even talked politics. Others were selling dacha. Others were selling booze in their siblings. They were big-handed. Unfortunately, they were, this guy was from the ANC, and they were all councillors of the ANC. They went to the municipality because they had all the time to do this mobilization. And this guy was using the information that he got inside the municipality, claiming that these councillors which were there have embezzled funds, all these funny things, using the information that he got inside the municipality. I'm telling you, all those councillors, 20 of them, we've got 24 councillors, 20 of them got into the municipality. When the province was to deploy, I'm going to be short here, when the province was to deploy into the mayoral committee, they couldn't know what to do. When they came to us, what is it that we can do? I said, no, I will never know. Because you could have known, you could have seen this thing coming. Because we told you that this is what was happening. Now the same thing, that couldn't take us forward. It's so unfortunate that you don't see protests in those areas. But I'm telling you, if the people of those areas can start protests, you'll see very, very violent protests. Because they can feel the pinch, because they just put people who don't know what is it that we need to do, who knows that they want to be there, they want power, or they'll be able to influence for tenders and other things. And I think we are still saying as a department, no, we're going to regulate even that chaos. We'll find the way of regulating and depend on chance if these people are going to think to us. I want the department to consider these things that we are raising here, and these examples that I'm coming with, because these are living examples, and refer to you then and to what is taking place, because they are full-time councillors, as I'm saying, a full-time councillor who's doing another job now. So, Chairperson, if really, as Salka was saying, no matter what are their comments before, but as they are saying, if we can have a point where we think this is a cutting point. You can be a candidate, but at this stage, when you've got the certificate, then resign from administration because you are no longer there. You wanted this site, then get into it, then you find the way. Thank you very much, Sir President. Otherwise, when I'm looking at their local government 10-point plan, I'm seeing something here. Create a single window of coordination. But on this other side, they are creating four windows. Because it means there are many chances to remain in the municipality. You can be in the administration, and when you think that no, let me try and change direction, you change it. When you are unsuccessful, you come back again. So this creation of single window of coordination, even in this 10-point plan, I wonder. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I think we have made our comment. Order, Chief. You need to be in order.
Yeah.
I'm calling you to order. Because when somebody speaks, you don't. If you want to speak, you'll raise when somebody has kept quiet. Please. I was saying we've made questions, comments, and clarities. It's not necessary a constitutional court where we'll make rulings. I think the department is also picking up the points that are important for further engagement and all sorts of things. And the other thing that I would want the House to note is that this meeting is not about asking permission to be a candidate. If we could, as we speak, all of us, understand that principle, we would be able to make correct recommendations to the input, precisely because that is given by the Constitution. It is there. The only thing is about regulating the process towards being a candidate. If we put our focus there, we'd be able to make correct recommendations so that the department is able to finalize this bill into action. And remember, it's about municipal staff. It's not general. It's too specific. As we are speaking now, anyone has got the right to do whatever. It's happening, but it's not regulated. Maybe it's out of the experiences that would learn as going forward. I think that needs to be noted. However, before you respond, I'll give Salga, because Salga wanted to raise something. Salga?
I just wanted to ask a question. As we are moving towards professionalizing our administration, and where politics should not be at the center, really, and have professional staff, how do we reconcile it with a situation where you have people who just wanted to be politicians, even if it might mean they were on a party list or they were candidates or whatever? How do we match the two?
I think this question will be relevant as we deal with Municipal Systems Amendment Act, because it's exactly what that act seeks to address. But however, maybe if there is anyone who can clarify it further, we need to clarify it. But as I read, I think it's coming soon to the committee. It's very, very, very much key, the question on that. And I believe Salga is also engaging at another level. On that one, but it's very important. But we can clarify it. Whoever's got more informed than me information, you are welcome to do that. Chief.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think, just briefly, that I concur with what the Chairperson has indicated here, that we as a department will take all the comments and suggestions made by the House, because this is at a stage where we have published for public comment. And we will consider these other issues that the House has indicated in putting to the final document, the final draft for promulgation by the Minister. Also, Chairperson, to indicate that most of the things that have been mentioned, just in this sentence, those things that have been mentioned here are issues that sometimes don't fall within what we are doing here. The enabling section of the Act gives the minister to regulate on the conditions for staff members participating in elections. So other issues that which might also be relevant might be out of the scope of the enabling section in the Act that gives the minister the power to regulate. Should the minister go further and regulate outside of the conditions of staff members participating in elections, that will be wrong and illegal for the minister to trend into that particular parameters. So I'll also request that as members discuss this, as members, you know, come with input and all that, look into the limitations that the minister has in regulating this particular section of council staff members participating in elections, not the other way around. Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe my other colleagues will interrupt.
Is there anyone from the department who want to consolidate the notings and all sorts of things?
Honorable Chairperson, I really appreciate the fact that we know the comments and the red lights that are being raised by the honorable members of the committee. It is important that committees like this exist to give us guidance where we might have overlooked an issue. What is important is that we make note of all the comments that have been made with regard to this particular piece of legislation. And then we'll bring it back to your attention, Honorable Chair, the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think on these two issues, we are closing until further engagement. And I'm looking at time, and then food. What's happening with food?
With your permission, I was going to suggest that we exhaust all the items of the agenda and we can go for future.
Okay.
Thank
you very much. What is next? Yeah, I believe this was the most exhaustive issue that we have dealt with. The turnaround strategy, we just need to remember we owe the committee a workshop, but now let's just indicate where we are. Where did you do that one?
Good morning, Honourable Chair, members of the House. Thank you very much for this opportunity. The local government turnaround strategy started in 2009 with the development of the State of Local Government report. And we found that government was working, but it's in distress. The reasons for that was identified being systemic, policy and legislative, political factors, weaknesses, capacity and skills, weak intergovernmental support and issues associated with the intergovernmental fiscal system. Then the local government 10-point plan became the core of the local government turnaround strategy. And the progress to date on the turnaround strategy is that the majority of municipal turnaround strategies have been developed, that we are in a process of receiving, registering and processing all the municipal turnaround strategies, that our COXA MINMEC in March indicated that rapid response teams must be established at all three levels, and that a number of municipal rapid response teams have been established, policy and legislative reforms to improve cooperative governance, that proposed legislation will be submitted to Parliament during 2010-11 on key areas listed here. MINMEC also approved the contractual commitment between the Minister and MECs on the local government turnaround. Performance contracts on outcome 9, including the local government turnaround strategies, are to be signed in August. We have established guidelines for phase 3, which is almost at its end, and evaluation of some of the municipal turnaround strategies have been done, included in the IDP credibility framework. We have received a number of turnaround strategies and at this stage we don't have foresee any problems with the council adoption of them. We are currently in our implementation scenario. Implementation of our municipal turnaround strategies at this stage requires total intergovernmental effort. We need mobilization of our rapid response and hands-on support, and we need our implementation forums to be closely monitoring implementation of all 12 outcomes of government. An MOU between our minister and partners in government will be signed as part of the Outcome 9 delivery agreement, and the department single window of coordination will do the following: work with our sector departments. We will work with our sector departments comprising the delivery forum for Outcome 9. We will assist sector coordination and LTTAF monitoring, and we will coordinate the LTTAF related projects within the department. And crucially, we will align policy and legislative reform processes within a cycle of evidence-based learning arriving from our root cause analysis. The challenges that we are experiencing currently is sector departments at national and provincial government level have not yet comprehensively committed plans and resources to the MTASs. Detailed MTAS assessment process is needed to a certain degree of compliance with spatial referencing, and our delivery agreements with sector departments must be better coordinated. State-owned entities have also not yet committed fully, and we need a broader dialogue there with state-owned entities. A capacity of challenges on all the spheres to deliver on these multiple mandates is a huge challenge. We have emerging evidence of good practices. Phase 1 and 2 in Mpumalanga, some of our municipalities adhere to the SMART concept on the project by considering alignment between the MTAS, IDPs and budget, and we just experienced a lot of enthusiasm. We also have a report to our LTTAS coordinators meeting on the 15th of April from the Free State. Provincial Intergovernmental Working Group team representatives were established, and the coordination became the joint responsibility with the Premier's offices. Municipalities led their municipal-specific processes, and commissions were chaired by councillors or Section 57 managers. Now, we are at this stage where we need to identify what needs to be done differently from previous initiatives. And the key issue is that we are integrating what we are doing in our MTAS process with IDPs, SDBIPs, and we are deliberately putting that into the delivery agreement that the minister is going to sign with other national ministers as well as MECs and mayors. We are establishing a single window of coordination, and we are working on all levels with other departments. The differentiation process is also being taken forward, where we are establishing four proposed classes of municipalities currently. A class 1, very high vulnerability, class 2, high vulnerability, and medium and low vulnerability. And once finalized, this new segmented model of differentiation will form the bedrock for the new approach to supporting local government. We found previously that there was insufficient focus on support and systems, and we are now going towards the outcomes-based approach. We will have hands-on political leadership, and we will focus on the underlying root causes in making improvements and designing interventions in our municipalities. And we will monitor and report to MINMEC in a process of stronger intergovernmental management and coordination. We will protect the institutional integrity of our municipalities by not parachuting projects into municipalities, by working together with all the key structures. And we will have a structured review of policy and legislation. What are the key changes required going forward? we need to improve our early warning system for failing municipalities. We need improved and better coordinated support measures, strengthened means of intergovernmental oversight, a better understanding or role clarification between the administration and political interfaces in the local sphere. Our provincial departments responsible for local government need to be better resourced, structured, capacitated to form a single window of coordination role at the provincial level, and again, improved accountability measures would become crucial. Way forward, we are in the right at the beginning of implementation in our phase, so we need to provide a lot of effort into establishing our national command unit as the driver of the single window of coordination. We need to improve coordination and management, especially with regard to existing limited resources and the need to provide additional resources where required. We need an improved communication strategy to reflect positively on our achievements. We need to identify and support which municipalities are not sustainable and build the capacity of our provincial departments of local government. Thank you.
Thank you very much. If we can quickly deal with what committee model.
Pardon me, Chairperson, I forgot to introduce Dr. Mariki Kruger.
And the next one is Joseph Mutala.
Thank you very much. Did we introduce ourselves? There were many, we don't know each other. My name is Alfred Mokhozi, the chairperson of Select Committee, and I will allow members of the committee to be known for their public representative roles.
Pinka Matila, a member of the committee.
Shatamu Fuki, member of the committee. Patty Watson, DA member of the committee.
Bonnie Selenes, member of the committee.
Thank you very much.
Jack Becker, member of the committee.
Oh, Becker, yes. I think the leaders of the department can also introduce themselves.
Yes.
And Falga will come, political leader of municipalities.
Cool. Chair, I've already been introduced, but I'm George Kilian from the department.
Honourable Chair, I'm Marna Cook from the department.
Honourable Chair, I'm George Sitisho from COCTA.
Honourable Chair, I'm Ricky Creer, also from COCTA.
Honourable Chair, members, I'm Ntlakane from Ministry.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'm Tebo Omotlasuping from COCTA.
Well, thanks, and as I've been introduced, my name is Justice Mushan, also from COCTA.
I think I'm already forgotten.
I know, because the chairman always fools me when he has problems. But because there's no problems, I must introduce myself as well. No, I'm Jeff Mkwena, Minister.
Thanks.
And I'm CPO PT, Sargarep. No.
You just met. We won't forget you. We play jazz from time to time.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and afternoon members. I'll be taking through members through the what we call national framework, out-of-pocket expenses for ward committee members, but now commonly referred to as funding model for ward committees. What I've done is just to give a brief background where we come from this national framework, to say that it emanates from the Local Government Laws Amendment Act of 2008. And I've specifically just quoted two insertions in this amendment, which deal specifically with to say that a metro or a local council must develop a policy and determine criteria for and calculation of out-of-pocket expenses referred to in paragraph 6, of course, I didn't quote that, based on provincial framework determined by the MEC subject to paragraph E. So this framework, the policy at local level will be determined, based on the province and the national framework. It says the minister must determine a national framework, including criteria for the calculation of the out-of-pocket expenses referred to in paragraph B. And since this publication of Local Government Laws Amendment Act, we also, the minister did make presentation to cabinet, and approval was granted that we could publish this framework for public comments. And that has happened during April 2009, where the national framework was published for public comments. And October last year, then we published the final framework for adoption by provinces and eventually municipalities to develop their policies. Just in terms of the objective of this framework, there's basically three objectives to say. We want to improve ward committee functionality by ensuring that ward committee members are more effective and able to effectively support their elected ward councillors to serve the broader community. But secondly, is to reimburse ward committee members with any out-of-pocket expenses that they may have reasonably incurred in undertaking their activities. Lastly, is to provide guidelines for provinces to develop provincial-specific frameworks within which metropolitan and local council should set policies for the payment of these out-of-pocket expenses, of course, as provided in the Local Government Laws Amendment Act. I've also added what the framework addressed in terms of the expectation of the roles of municipalities is to say they will still have to continue, providing space and equipment for these ward committee members to be able to undertake the activities, provide technical administrative assistance through dedicated municipal staff. As we know that ward committee members are volunteers, therefore they will be from the municipal side to provide administrative support so that they become really functional and address issues of community. Also the community material, community interaction system and campaign. But lastly, of course, is to budget for these out-of-pocket expenses. Also, what we've added is to guide provinces and municipalities in determining their provincial-specific frameworks and also municipalities in their policies is to say the size and population of the ward will determine what could be, budgeted to make these ward committee members, functional. The number of wards, in that particular municipality, the frequency of meetings is one of the criteria to determine the, and of course the revenue base of that municipality. Also in the framework, we've also included what the funding sources are available to make this ward committee, the out-of-pocket expenses, to be able to budget for it. To say the first one is municipality through its own revenue sources, but also we say the local government equitable share could serve the contribution to serve this purpose. And lastly, we have the what we call municipal system improvement grant, which in part is aimed at addressing the issues of ward committee functionality. Just to remind members of the process, we did make presentation of this the ward funding model at the Community Participation and Multilingualism Conference, which took place sometimes in 2009. And I mean, the question might be asked as to why. What happened is that this, the ultimate national framework out-of-pocket expenses, we had already started as a department to develop what committee funding model. So this has served as a basis of developing the national framework. And also, National Treasury, as a very key stakeholder, was consulted. And of course, as I've indicated earlier, to say the framework was gazetted for public comments. And our minister specifically has consulted the MECs for local government, as well as mayors and municipalities at large for specific, you know, requests for their comments on the draft. Lastly, I've just quoted what in the minister's speech, and specifically the last point to say. Minister indicated that, you know, we now require a reformed regime of remuneration and provisions for tools of trade for councillors, ward committee members, and CDWs. And we believe that this national framework is in the right direction in terms of addressing that specific issue. But also, maybe just before to conclude, to say, in terms of our outcome 9 and specifically output 5, we are addressing some of the challenges which after the publication of this ward funding model specifically, because in there we deal specifically at looking the whole ward committee system, but also looking at the funding model which can support, you know, the implementation of this national framework, because one of the challenges, which of course we got as a feedback from municipalities and provinces, is the issue of affordability of municipalities to actually implement. So those have been taken care as part of the delivery agreement, which we business the department developing. Thanks.
Thank you for that presentation. I would now call for comments, clarity, input, patience. Honorable Watson?
Just me and my semantics again, Chair. Page 43, the start of the presentation, refers the as to the actual act of 2008, and then refers to section 73.5 A and E, and yet goes B and E. I take it that is incorrect in the heading.
Honorable Ness.
I understand, but just a clarity. Cost determinants, that is 47. Size and population of the ward. Now I'm thinking, and I've got an answer already, but I want to clarify it. I suspect I'm right, I'm not sure. Aren't wards determined nationally in terms of the population? If you are saying 500 people which are staying then in this area, then that makes a ward. Or whatever, 5,000 or whatever. Isn't that the situation? If that is the situation, why now the population of the ward, the size? Maybe it's because of the vastness. That's why I was giving myself an answer. And if I'm wrong somewhere there, then I'll be clarified that I think I'm trying to answer myself. I'm not sure. Now, number of words. We are determining the cost. For instance, maybe here in Cape Town, maybe you've got 100 and something words. Are they going to earn as members of the ward committee in terms of their ward? Or this is what I'm not sure about. Isn't the cost, I understand that it will be determined in terms of their revenue. And then this issue of frequency of meeting. Again, is it not nationally determined, the frequency of meeting? Who determines the frequency of meeting? Is it the MEC in the province? Or is it the mayor and the councillors? in the ward, or is it the ward committee and the ward council? I'm just interested on this thing, Chairperson, so that I can be sure.
Honorable Martinez.
No, Chair, thank you. Understanding the funding, the way you're thinking it should be funded. My fear is that we must be careful that in most cases, you know, we get this type of input. At the end of the day, departments, you know, end up coming up with unfunded mandates towards municipalities, because it's a complaint already that it's costly, municipalities won't afford. We're not sure, because if you look at the municipal's own revenue, you know, in most cases, some municipalities can't even run on their own, you know, which is a problem. And here, you know, there's not clarity as to. I can see you have consulted with Treasury. You're talking about grants and whatever, you know. But you see, go in a situation here, you have, and as indicated by my colleague, the metros, where you have something like 100 wards. What is it that you're talking about? You know, how are you going to deal, taking into account the backlogs that are there, the problems that are there, because it means that we will have a lot of meetings of the different sectors within that ward committee, because they have to sit. Will you afford that situation? You know, that's a problem. And my worry is already there are some municipalities that have started to look at this. Some are implementing, you know, but the problem is they can't afford. You know, they realize now that it's a problem. It's a problem. And the point I'm raising is this not another unfunded mandate going towards municipalities whilst they don't have revenue to just give basic services to those communities?
Is there any other question, input, whatever, because I'm going to close.
My question would be the financial assistance that National Treasury is giving, for example, to what level 3 municipalities? Yeah, which are classified as poor. Wouldn't that principle apply with the out-of-pocket expenses for those kind of municipalities also?
Thank you very much, Dr. Nala, for conclusive response.
Okay. No, thanks, Honorable. May I start with the issue of whether this is an unfunded mandate or not? I think the clause in the Local Government Laws Amendment Act to say the minister must develop a national framework for out-of-pocket expenses came as a result of the fact that municipalities will continue to pay in one way or the other the out-of-pocket expenses. But unfortunately, that was not standardized. But I just come into the unfunded mandate. There's a specific section, and I think in many cases when this national framework is read, which deals with the financial viability. And I'll just read it. It says the financial viability of municipalities must be a key consideration in determining the amounts that should be budgeted for out-of-pocket expenses. However, proper communication is integral to the service delivery and must be treated as a key priority for municipalities. It must be budgeted as part of the core municipal processes. But I think the key point is to say, while we've put certain amounts, when you read carefully the national framework, it doesn't say that, you know, municipalities should pay a certain amount. That is why the issue of affordability. So all what we've been saying is that municipalities should, and I think this addresses also that issue raised by the cost determination. And I take the point that, you know, the population is determined and then it should be equal. But I think what is important, we're considering more of the size, to say in terms of the frequency and the vast, you know, it might mean differently, you know, from municipality to municipality as to how they budget this amount. But can I also to say, just quote another subsection in this national framework, which is, says this amount may be adjusted to the extent that a particular municipality covers some of this cost itself upfront by arranging transport and refreshment for the ward committee members. So once again, we were very careful in drafting this national framework to say, while municipalities should budget ward committee members, but there are different options, and actually that came through the public comments and specifically from municipalities. So the point is to say this framework was trying to standardize, to support ward committee members in carrying out the activities, but we're careful to say not all municipalities will be able to afford it. That is why we've included certain sections to cover that. And the last question, I must say, Honorable Member, I'm not aware of this. Maybe my other colleagues might be aware of this allocation. Is it from Treasury, you say,
Level 2 municipalities for the payment of municipal councillors.
Or payment of municipal councillors.
Yes.
No. Yeah, if...
That is a grant that is given for that purpose.
Okay. No, as I say that, but if it's for municipal councillors, I would guess that, you know, because here specifically it doesn't cover the ward councillors, but it's only the members. But I'm not aware, I'm not sure if other colleagues are aware of this grant.
Can I just clarify myself, Chair?
Yeah.
What I'm trying to say is that those municipalities are supported due to the weak financial base of the municipality. Now, recognizing that fact, shouldn't you then say in the principle used to subsidize those municipalities, shouldn't you therefore further subsidize when it gets to the ward committees out-of-pocket expenses?
Okay. I think the only subsidies which we have included is, from our department, is the Municipal System Improvement Grant. That is a form of subsidy. Yes.
So we are not in a bargaining chamber. I think the input can be taken. I understand why he's raising that, but it needs another area. Would that?
Yes.
All right. Let me thank everyone.
Thank you, Chairperson. Would have wanted to spend further on the outer part of their hands, seeing that they are part of the legislative committee. So they are having their bread buttered on both sides. Chair, we really would want to indicate that as far as Outcomes 9 is concerned, and I know it has been mentioned quite a few times in the presentations, that is basically the contract between the minister and the president, which also cascades down to the provinces and to municipalities. We have requested, I think, the correspondence between JERS and us and your secretariat is beginning to tell you that we are requesting an urgent interaction with your committee so that you begin to then see the synergy between local government turnaround, all these legislation pieces, together with the outcomes line of the president. And with regard to the financing model, I think instead of dealing more with it, there are other litmus tests that this has to undergo. Firstly, the issue that relates to your equitable share, your municipal systems improvement grant. Over and above that, the Commission on the Remuneration of Public Office Bearers also has to look at it from recommendations when this committee has applied their minds on it, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone who wants to raise any issue that you think is burning in your heart? None. All right, let me thank you, everyone.
No, Chair, the only point I wanted to raise is not for discussion now today, but I think it is important that the department comes back to us, particularly under all this Section 139 that we have undergone, to just check as to how has the department assisted them, what has happened, so that they give us a report. You see, we are not getting joy from the provinces around that specific area, and therefore it's important for us to get that check. Thank you.
Can I add to that? Also, in regard to reports from the provinces stating that where the committee on investigation found that it would be necessary to have a forensic audit done, we have been reported that these investigations have been passed on to the department, but with no further details, and that being the delay. So we really need to interact, I think, so that we can solve the problems that the communities face in these municipalities where we have actually imposed the 159.
I think those are important inputs that the department need to note. And our secretary of the department must arrange a meeting. Let's get the space and get the progress report in general with Section 139. The specific issues of investigations, because when we speak in public, the public doesn't forget. They would say, you said this will happen, done by the department of the province, and it's not that. I think it's important that we need to engage on that one. Yesterday we met one province which referred to the department. I'm not sure whether it's passing the bug or whatever. About scoping of investigations, we don't know. But I won't mention that because this is not a relevant platform to accuse this and that one. But I think the department would engage with the secretary. Let's have that that meeting, and it's very much important. And also generally, there are other Section 139 that are not referred to the SOP, which are not our competence. It's a provincial discretionary competence. Maybe just to get what's happening, it's not necessarily our competence. Just to have a view, so that when you meet these things, also we are able to have an answer on behalf of the state, because it's about complementing the legislation and the executive part. And really taking the governance forward. I think that is important. But to say thanks very much, this meeting was well attended. We want to thank the department for coordinating, and want to thank our committee secretaries and the unit for attending. We want to thank Salga for being part of us and the media. Who is going to take you into the television? We thank everyone, but there is food. Well, then it will be announced how, where are we going to get it. If we don't eat it, then it's a wasteful expenditure. let's consume it. Where are we eating? Who's announcing?